Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far,
welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for March 15th, 2022. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling podcast feed or our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the links in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box as the sponsor of this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts, it's your old pal, Mike Spears. Joined alongside, for having his flu game this week, it is Case Lowe. And Case, we're going to have a short one this week. I know that you're under the weather. We're dipping into historical content this week. We're talking Kness and Yoshino. And I already know the answer of it, but how are you doing, bud?
I am doing okay. I apologize to everyone listening in advance. We're talking about one of the most important feuds in the history of Dragon Gate. This is an episode that longtime fans should be able to enjoy, and new fans that maybe just found out about this podcast or just started watching Dragon Gate, they should be able to learn a lot from this podcast. They are going to have to put up with my voice. I'm so sorry. I sound like Blake from Jawbreaker around the time they recorded Kiss the Bottle, which means nothing to most of you listening, but for a few people, very good reference. You're welcome. This is the best my voice has sounded all day. There was a point this afternoon where I didn't think I was going to be able to record. This is my flu game. I am built different. I am powering through, but I apologize in advance.
Hey, we all have like those things that it's just like you sound like crap, and you we were talking before you got on air. I know that you're feeling a little better, but this is not going to be a long one this week, both because of, you know, this is your flu game, but we're not going to go have you go out there play all 48 here, Case. You know, did Michael Jordan play all 48 minutes in the flu game?
No, because Michael Jordan's a pussy.
Oh, there we go.
I'm sorry. I'm very anti-Michael Jordan. That's one of, like, I can be wavered at a lot of things. I can't stand Michael Jordan. He's a degenerate gambler. He's a bad person. He's the second greatest basketball player of all time behind Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I, you know, you want to put LeBron second or third, I don't care. I still think Kareem is number one. But it's very tough living in Chicago and having to deal with so much Michael Jordan lore constantly, you know, almost 25 years after he stopped playing for the Bulls. I'm sick of it. I don't care for the guy. I don't care for his legacy. And no, he did not play all 48 minutes in the flu game. I'm going to put on a 48 minute podcast about Masato Yoshino and Kness, which is far braver than anything Jordan ever did.
Oh, there we go. There we go. We're bringing the heat in the flu game. Speaking of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the best actor on Winning Time. I know we've talked about Winning Time like intermittently a little bit. The best actor on Winning Time, yes, a show that includes John C. Reilly, is Salman Hughes, who plays Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, it's only two episodes in, and it's insane how much I dislike John C. Reilly in this show. But like Jerry West, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the guy playing Magic Johnson, all fantastic. But John C. Reilly's driving me insane right now on this showcase.
So I have not seen any of Winning Time yet. I was so bummed out. I don't remember if you were in the Voices of Wrestling Slack or in the EE Discord. I don't remember which one it was, but you started railing against the show. And I was so bummed out because the only other person that I hear talking about Winning Time a lot is Chris Zellner on my Twitter feed. And Zellner's been putting it over like crazy. And I keep on going, oh man, today's the day I'm going to sit down and watch Winning Time. And it just hasn't happened yet. And then I saw you just destroying it a few days ago, and I got so bummed out. So I'm not able to form an opinion on it just yet. I think it looks really good. I'm excited to watch it, but I cannot offer any takes on it other than that I think it looks good.
I'll say this. There's a lot of that. We've talked about The Big Short, Adam McKay, and a lot of stuff that he really kind of defined in The Big Short he brings forward, but it's not necessarily in the, hey, like I always refer to the Selena Gomez and Nobel Prize economist playing blackjack, like they do like those things and those breaking the fourth wall instances, and they kind of go a little bit overkill with it early. And John C. Reilly just is like eating scenery, and he's being like, I'm John C. Reilly, but I'm Dr. Jerry Buss, but I'm John C. Reilly in this. And I'm like, we're doing a historical like comedy drama about the rise of the Showtime Lakers here, and John C. Reilly is just chewing on the walls here. And then there's weird technical things that only bother me, and that's my cross to bear. Like like applying film grain for one shot and then instantly applying a film effect that's supposed to look like a 1979 videotape, that bothers me. And that's me. I'm an unbearable person.
Yeah, that's a specific to you problem that I unfortunately cannot show you any sympathy for. That's just a weird thing to have a beef with.
No. That's entirely me. But it's a show that I find interesting. I don't know if I like it, but I find it fascinating. And I'm going to continue watching it. And maybe it's something like they have. I don't feel like I can spoil the show too much since it's based in history, but they spent a lot of time talking about Jerry West's like backstory and how miserable Jerry West is, and they managed to do it like in such a way that I was like, all right, these are the moments that I'm like truly into this show. So, you know, give it a shot when you're ready. I mean, I think you should watch Fabulous Gemstones because I need to talk to you about how insane the season is, especially if you're man on the show. So, you know, go with God, but you know, I'm an unbearable person. I get bothered when you use 16 millimeter After Effects and you compare that the next shot, like 6 seconds later, and only me notice this, U-matic film, U-matic videotape. That bothers me personally.
And that's right. I do owe you two HBO shows now because I need to catch up on Gemstones. I am, of course, a Tim Bolt stan, and my understanding is he crushed it this past season, and then I need to catch up on Winning Time as well. While we're talking about stuff that isn't Dragon Gate, can I have an on-air production meeting with you real quick?
Okay.
Can we talk about Shima versus Okada next week?
Yeah, we probably, I mean, that's...
with all due respect to the Super J-Cast guys, lovely human beings, this is our domain. This is our match. Shingo winning the title, great, good for him. Not relevant to Dragon Gate anymore. Shima versus Okada, incredibly important content for the Open the Voice Gate podcast.
Yeah, and it's like something where everyone's like, oh yeah, Shima's doing this. How far is it going? I was like, as soon as I saw his bracket, I was like, oh yeah, Shima's going to beat like the first three people and then lose to Okada. Like, was that your reaction when you saw the bracket for Shima? Like, there's no way he was going to lose to Hirooki Goto. Shima doesn't lay down for that, right?
I knew we were going to get Okada versus Shima. There's been some conspiracies of Shima beating Okada, and I am sucked into that wormhole now. I want that to happen so badly.
Do we think that Chima has worked both Liger and Dick Togo into getting a title shot? Like, this might make me reassess like how dire things have been with Gleet and OWE and his Hall of Fame case if he pulls this off, to be quite honest. Because I was almost on my way out case on Chima in the Hall of Fame. But if he pulls this off here, like, this is a master stroke. And, you know, he's not maybe this is how they got him to like be like, all right, Chima, you can come aboard here. Like, remember when 0-1 was about to like basically like it felt like they were remaking the company because Chima was coming and it was getting a world title shot at Sumo Hall. Like, maybe we're seeing a little bit of that here, and I think that's fascinating. And then Okada, boy, UDO6, like the one like shining light of UDO6 versus the linchpin of Toriumon Japan, and the first time they would have ever been in the ring together, is just inherently fascinating to me.
You know, that Chima versus Masato Tanaka match ended up happening. It happened in Cork and Hollis at a Sumo Hall. And that's a real bummer because that match was really, really good. And that did not get the hype that it deserved. That was a really unique match with two total pros, and I thought they crushed it. So that was really good. That was the last time Chima popped up in 0-1. I don't know about Chima going over or not. I do think it's going to be a really good match, and I'm really excited to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it's something where when Chima wants to be incredibly giving, he could be incredibly giving. And I have not watched any of the New Japan Cup or Wrestle Kingdom, so I can't speak on him in New Japan. Like, that would be completely fraudulent of me. But it does, I do get the impression that we are getting Chima of working shoes, not Chima on a vacation wanting to fuck around here. Like,
no, this is the big time. Shima's got to work. I haven't seen any of the New Japan Cup stuff, but my understanding is that he's killed it because he's Chima, and when the spotlight is on, he steps up.
Right. So, I mean, I'm not going to completely slander Gleet again here. I'm not slandering. I'm speaking truth. What am I saying? I'm not going to bury and work stiff on Gleet here, but if they're able to work through some things with certain people on that roster that Chima has dealt with in the past, I mean, that's the only place that he's going to be making big money. And whenever I look at Gleet, I look at the houses and I look at how things are going for them. I look at their revenue streams and I go like, that's a short-term pay. Like, bringing Chima in, especially with how their house style has changed over the last decade, there's worse things to do to get the Strong Hearts in. It gets a landing spot for T-Hawk eventually. Linda Bank is going to be fine regardless, but, you know, I don't know anything. I think that it's kind of a fascinating path that could be happening here. And that's just my pure speculation, though.
Well, it's interesting to see Chima slowly developing a home in New Japan. Lindemann has his ongoing program with El Desperado, so he has somewhere to be. And T-Hawk is working the Champion Carnival.
Yep, he is working the Champion Carnival. Hopefully All Japan can draw more than 220 people there.
Oh my god. Again, I mean, look, it sounds harsh, but we're both on the same page. I think the wrestling scene would just be so much healthier if All Japan just went away. Unfortunately, in the landscape of modern Japanese wrestling, they wouldn't just filter into other promotions. There would be another promotion that would pop up and take more low-level guys, try to make them main eventers, and it would be another promotion that doesn't draw. But
yeah,
All Japan doing 200-plus in Cork and Hall last week is an abomination. I mean, still, the best drawing card they've had in Cork and since the start of the pandemic was the January 2nd show this year that was headlined by T-Hawk and L. Lindemann in an All-Asia Tag Team title match.
Yeah, I mean, it's hoping that, because I looked at the blocks and I was just like, okay, that's what they can do now. And does not look, I mean, they do have a dojo. I mean, the Saito twins, for as much as we say, like, I mean, they do have like an influx of talent, but you just kind of take a step back and you're like, really, All Japan? You had a, because it was a, I don't know if it was All Asia or World Tag Team title match that drew that 220. Like, it's bad.
I think it was the All Japan heavyweight tag team titles. I'm not sure. I don't feel like looking it up because it's 2022 All Japan. And I'm sure during this podcast, we're going to dive into cage match quite a bit. This is not going to be one of those times.
Yeah. So interesting thing for Strong Hearts. You know, I mean, that match is going to happen on Sunday. I might like reactivate New Japan World for that match. Like, that's enough for me to be like, all right, that's worth $9 for me to see first time Shima versus Kazuchika Okada. Like, I think that's a fair amount of money to pay to watch that match.
All right. Now, Mike, I am violently coughing off air as you talk. So I think now is the time to transition to our topic at hand for both me and the listener's sake.
Yeah, let's get into it. So we've talked occasionally about Kanes in light of his upcoming retirement on April 7th. We will have more coverage about Kanes and his career and looking towards that retirement show as we get closer to it. But a couple of weeks ago, we decided to both pick Kanes versus Yoshino matches. And due to time, we were like, all right, we can't do the entire give these matches like the respect they deserve. So we decided this week to get into, with the exception of Dragon Kid, the biggest feud of Kanes' career and one of the biggest feuds of Masato Yoshino's career. And we have a series of matches that we found. A lot of them are on the network, luckily, so you can go seek them out there that way. But it's time to talk about the history of Masato Yoshino / Yoshino and Kanes, also known as, it's time to talk about some hot fighting, Case.
Absolutely. So in the history of Dragon Gate, the top feuds of all time, I think you have to put Shingo versus Hulk number one. Other than that, a straight one versus one feud, it's very hard to top the legacy that Yoshino versus Kanes has at this point in time. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I would put all time probably Shima Mochizuki as okay, like that yeah. one. That was a feud that lasted basically close to 20 years before they both left, before Shima left. But after that, yeah, Shingo versus Hulk, and probably right there, it's Yoshino versus Kanes. Because this is a feud, like when we talk about like other Rewind and Rewatches in the past where it's very concentrated, this is a feud that they had seven singles matches from 2002 to 2013. And of course, they had a bunch of tag and trios and three ways and all of that. But this was something that Dragon Gate constantly would go back to with the two of them, especially when Kanes's health was permitting, that they realized in 2002, starting with the first match they had in T2P, that these two guys just from the jump had incredible chemistry, and they were doing matches, singles matches that were distinctly different than a lot of the singles matches that you'd be seeing in the promotion at the time.
Yeah, in terms of the all-time great feuds, even just with Yoshino, you could point to, obviously, Yoshino versus Naruki Doi, but I don't think they have a signature singles match. And then you have Yoshino versus Dragon Kid, who, between Gate of Destiny 2008 and the way that they carried the initial Dragon Gate International brand on their shoulders, you have a lot of signature matches there, but you don't necessarily have the hate. Yoshino versus Kanes has the matches and it has the hate. It's really impressive in the grand scheme of things.
Right, yeah. And it's something that very much was rooted in Toriumon Japan versus Toriumon 2000 project, but it had different ebbs and flows. And there's like, and unlike the Shingo versus Hulk feud, and unlike Shima versus Mochizuki, where there was kind of a little back to forth here, I would argue that over the 11 years of this feud, there was a clear storyline about this. So I think it's worth stating here, and I don't think that is a big spoiler, Kanes never would have a singles victory over Yoshino or Masato Yoshino throughout their seven matches. He never got the win there, and several of them were title matches. Several of them were for the NWA World Welterweight title during the Toriumon days, and then the Bravegate tournament, and then their final match was a Bravegate title match at Kobe World 2013. But there is a story here of Kanes figuring out Masato Yoshino, and I think that that is kind of the thread line that like starts in 2002, and each match with these two guys, you're seeing Kness do different things to try to get the win. Kness learning from the other matches that they had, and altogether, it kind of told a story that you don't necessarily see in these big heated rivalries. Because because Doi and Yoshino, I can't really tell you a storyline being told in the matches. It erupted out of Doi being jealous of Yoshino, not willing to be his flunky. Shima Mochizuki had so many different things go on for it, but most of the time it was for the title belts. This match was basically, this feud, I would argue, like told this is like two guys that went from hatred to respect, and an underlying thing of Kness trying to finally get this win over Masato Yoshino and coming up short, but again, coming closer each and every time.
So we're going to talk about five matches here. I watched four of them because, quite frankly, I just forgot about a fifth one in the middle. But you could probably watch all five of these matches in an hour. They're not super long matches, and the match-to-match-to-match-to-match progression is really satisfying to watch.
Right, yeah. So I rewatched a lot of this stuff today, and it was about an hour and 15 for all five matches. Like, the longest match is like 15 minutes between them. And it starts off on December 26th, 2002, in Toriumon 2000 Project with the end. This was the first match they had between the two of them on a Toriumon 2000 Project show. I think this was like one of the last ones, one of the last individual ones before they got into the overall breakup of Toriumon 2000, if I'm right.
Yes, this is the second to last T2P show. And it came at the end of 2002, where in a one-week period from December 20th through the 26th, they ran Cork and Hall three times. Two Toriumon proper shows with the in-ring return of Ultimo Dragon as a semi-active, semi-regular competitor. The December 20th show, he teamed with Dragon Kid in the main event against Rey Bucanero and Ultimo Guerrero. And on that show, they do a fan vote for matches on the 25th and the 26th, the 25th being a Toriumon show, and the 26th being that T2P show. The dream matches on the 25th were Masaki Mochizuki and Toru Owashi and Stalker Ichikawa and the T2P kid, Kenya. Help me with that last name, Mike. What was that guy's last name?
Oh, Kenya Oyanagi.
Thank you. Yeah, Stalker versus Kenya Oyanagi. And then on the 26th, imagine Yoshino versus Kness isn't even the top dream match on that show. This was their first meeting, but headlining that was Shima versus Milano Collection AT. So this is an all-time great T2P show. It's headlined by Shima versus Milano, but I think the legacy of this show is largely remembered by Yoshino versus Kness.
I mean, to just give people the sense of what we're going to cage match in minute 20 here, just to get a sense of how big the show in this week was, not only were Rey Bucanero and Ultimo Guerrero coming in to Toriumon here, the semi-main event on this 26th show is Kenichi Arai, Masaki Mochizuki, and Toru Owashi versus Norman Smiley, Perry Saturn, and Ultimo Dragon. Big time show.
Loaded.
Yeah. The Sato twins were unmasked as Sachioka Machine 3 and 4 on here. We had Do Fixer versus Italian Connection. So, like, this all in all was like a huge show for them. But really, the big match that everyone came away talking about was Yoshino versus Kness and this match. And it is the only singles. It was like the thing that like really stuck out to me was like, oh, having this match in the T2P ring, considering the fact of how, and we've talked about this case, how Yoshino was just overwhelmingly protected on in Toriumon, because you like look at the show, we just talked about this, Shima beat Milano, Yoshino beats Kness here, and that really kind of goes to the thing of Milano being the ace, but Yoshino being the most protected person here. And the big story about this match is Kness kind of dismantling Yoshino, and then Yoshino coming out of nowhere and getting a last gasp, turning the Darkness Buster into Torbellino and submitting Kness in their first matchup with the Sol Naciente.
Yes, so just for context as to where these guys are in their career, this is one of the early Kness matches. Of course, he lost the Darkness Dragon character in September of 2002. As my voice continues to go, I'm so sorry. But he loses that Darkness Dragon character in 2002 in September, and then quickly finds his way into the new unit known as Doofixer under the leadership of Magnum Tokyo. And he's in there with Susumu and with Saito, and they are running roughshod through this promotion at this point. And so you see a lot of great interference spots between the Italian Connection, who are well established at this point. They're the kings of T2P. They're the only thing relevant in T2P. And then you have this new Doofixer unit. And so even the seconds in this match are hot. Like, this is the definition of hot fighting.
Yeah, and Doofixer coming out of the Mascara Contra Mascara match, where Milano joins M2K, and it's all very kind of like, oh, now this, because Mochizuki leaves after he loses his hair and swears to have clean fighting and is expelled. And afterwards, Kness says, I'm going to team with a Dragon Kid, and we're going to be like Doofixer, basically. And it's revealed later on that M2K is actually the true Doofixer, and almost everyone from M2K basically defect en masse when Kness proves that he has not gotten over losing his mask. He remasks himself as Kness, and Doofixer becomes the heel unit for the next few years, up really until Aganisu comes out here. And with Italian Connection and T2P, as you said, like, there were other acts in T2P in the late part of it. Like, we have the Royal Brothers were in the opener in this match, to give you a sense of that they still are around. But it really kind of solidified in that this was the big group coming forward out of T2P, and this would be the group that would endear and endure. And it will have a different permutations and different kind of breakdowns throughout this episode here. But I mean, the big thing was that really, you already start seeing Kondati Tsuji and Masato Yoshino not being on the same page. And like, one of the big things is the first time that it feels like that Yoshino gets on the attack is because it is that we have Tsuji getting involved, and then Tsuji immediately gets kicked. And then during the big rope run interference spot, you have the fact that Kness gets out of the way and Tsuji hits him during this, and that leads into the Doofixer rope running thing, which is one of those things that I think the Torimon 2000 ring really lends to, is because you have the six corners, so you could do the ones that are just straight across the ring, so you're not like running diagonally. So I thought that was a really cool image in this match.
To put this match on the on a pedestal in the easiest way possible is just to say that through all of the matches we watched, but especially in this T2P match, there's nothing in wrestling that looks like this right now. This is on an island completely unto itself. And when I was watching all these Kness matches, my first thought was, oh my God, Mike Quackenbush is just Aldi Kness. Like, Kness does so many things better than what Quackenbush envisions himself doing, which was really funny to me. But the pacing, the grappling, the striking, nothing in wrestling looks remotely like this in 2022, and especially in T2P, with this crowd, with this atmosphere, with this ring. This is such a unique viewing experience, because you really, maybe you disagree, but I can't even remotely compare it to something that's happening right now.
No, because you also have the fact of you have the unit kind of warfare happening, and in such a way that compounds upon it. And I mean, the fact that basically Kness spends 10 minutes basically doing a whole lot of knee work, and then when Yoshino gets like these gasps, it's like he does the Komori into the ropes, but then Susumu comes and just sliding kicks him right into the face. And it's something that you really see, like, with Kness, is just he is such a rounded wrestler. In a way, he had done so many, like, just different ways of working that you don't see anymore. And the Quackenbush comparison, like I almost want to say, like, I don't know if that's being really too fair to Kness there, but there is a vein there that you totally see.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, that was just the first comparison that I made in my head was, oh my God, you know, Quackenbush wishes his counters were as unique and clever as Kinesa's were, and he wishes his strikes looked as good as this, and his grappling was as intricate and interesting as Kinesa's was. It is just not. I will say about the T2P match, it's not the best match that we watched between these two. I actually think my pick for the best match might surprise you, but it is my favorite match just because of it being in the T2P setting. The crowd for all of these matches, but especially this one, the crowd is molten. I mean, by the end of this, after that Kineska run-in, the Dufixer run-in that's capped off by the Kineska double team spot, they are so hot for the finishing stretch. It makes me miss fans in the contemporary age, but it just makes me reflect on the animals that were T2P.
Yeah, I mean, so Yoshino gets him to tap out, and I apologize, I'm sliding between Yoshino and Yoshino here. It's just, I'm just referring to him as Masato Yoshino. It just makes things easier for me. After he submits him, they start throwing streamers into the ring in celebration, and that's just something you just never see, even in like 2016 Dragon Gate, when they still had streamers, and just like people were really getting behind him, and it's something that would continue when he would become the NWA World Welter Champion, because that is a belt that he basically makes his own for the remainder of Toriumon Japan.
Yeah, and it leads us into the what is now known as Kobe World 2003.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
That's right. This is from June 29th, 2003. This is the fourth anniversary show at Kobe World Cannon Hall. This was for Yoshino's World Welterweight title versus Kness here. And this was the one of the matches that we picked to talk about before. And it's something that I wrote it down then, and when I wrote it down again, is this is one of the more effective matches that you will see people working the arm and working the shoulder, because both these guys come into this match incredibly banged up.
Yeah, they come in with real life shoulder injuries and they play the match off of that. And you know, if somebody were to ask me, hey, I've been watching Dragon Gate for a while, I really like the style, but I want to know what Toriumon was like, you know, how was the vibe different, I would show them obviously the August 30th 2003 tag match. I think I would show them Mulatto versus Saito from the first T2P show, just because that's such a fun exhibition. But then I would probably show them this match next. This is quintessential Toriumon wrestling. I mean, this is as good as it gets.
Yeah, and the big thing about this match, at least from Kness, is he shows that he has counters for Yoshino's moves that he learned from the match, not even basically 6 months before. And he breaks out what I think is one of my favorite submissions in Dragon Gate history, the Sol Nochus L, which is a variant of a way of him getting out of the Sol Naciente, and it's one of those more like insane moves here, and it's showing that Kness is, as I said, like, this is the through line. Kness is learning to adapt here, and this is the thing that like Kness would talk about in promos, was like how invigorating the fight is, because he's learning to adapt, and how it's such a hot fighting because it was so passionate and it was so back and forth. And the other big thing about this is we're starting to see 6 months later how the Italian connection is starting to splinter here, as Kandati Tsuji and Yashi were just constantly all over this and eventually get ejected halfway through this match.
So I really like the interference aspects of this match because they're so heated. If this fell onto a mute crowd, I would not care for it, but it clearly registered with the people in the building enough to where I look at that and I go, you know what? That is interesting. It's really odd to watch this technical classic interspersed with, you know, almost attitude era like interference spots. It's a really strange dichotomy, but I think it just adds another layer to this match that makes it even that much easier to sink your teeth into.
Right, yeah, because like you have that here, you have Venenzia, aka Zuki, the mini from Mexico. So as you watch this match is up on the network. The previous match will be up on the network in a few months, but you have the fact that Dewfixer basically stole Venenzia, and Venenzia was seen more as Yoshino's mascot in the same way that Minorita is Kota Minora's mascot. So, like, you had that kind of interplay here, and it just all came off very, like, the thing about this era and about Italian Connection is that it's such, like, you think it's such a stylized unit. You think that it's such a stylized presentation, and it's something that, like, you, as a viewer, you have to, like, go, like, all right, these guys are obviously not Italian. Like, that's kind of like the end joke, but you also have the fact that it's like, oh, we have Mikaru, the invisible dog for Milano Collection AT. We have Venenzia, Yoshino's monkey friend, and then we have the fact that Yagi is lying about how he is a fisherman, but actually he's the son of a baker, and the fact that Brother Yashi did not want to be Italian, so they made up the fact that now he's his cousin here. But it was such like an organic, complete act, and it was something that you know, I mean, all it requires is the crowd investment, and the crowd just goes nuts for the fact that basically Milano goes and pulls away two of the members that would later form Aganisu, and the fact that you kind of have really in a unit that does, other than like early M2K, like especially after Genki Horiguchi came in, like Mochizuki kind of was cleaning up his act and the other guys weren't having it. But you really have the idea of a heel unit, or a unit that was portraying tweeners. You have one people who want the clean fight, and one group of people want to have the dirty fight. And this is really the big implementation of that here with the Italian Connection.
Yeah, and then on the Kness side of things, you know, 2003 might be his best in-ring year, and it ends in October. He gets hurt and misses an entire year. He doesn't come back until it is Dragon Gate in October of 2004, but you watch his progression throughout this year. It's a guy who was obviously great as Darkness Dragon. He would be great later on in his career, but 2003, right before that first big injury, it feels like he is in his prime as a performer in this match.
Yeah. And it like really shows like he's able to like even like, I mean, they're both coming in injured here. And it's just like the smooth transitions that he would have out of the Torbellino, like, and into the Torbellino from Yoshino, like the Darkness Buster into the Torbellino. And then the way that Kness's shoulder and arm fell after the Darkness Buster was something really sick. And then you also have the fact that Yoshino realizes that the Sol Naciente, the guy has a counter for it, so I can't really go for this here. So I tried to look up this move case, but I can't find out what it was called. But he does a variant basically of an arm trap, like leg figure or head figure four to submit Kness here. And it is like one of those things that like it becomes very kind of special within the series of matches because the crowd picks up on this fact that this is how he retained this belt against him, and it plays off through the remaining matches of the series.
Yes, this is a Sol Naciente that he only used against Kness. He won with it here. He won with it in the December 2006 Speed Muscle versus Kineska tag match. I don't know if he ever won another match with it, but it is, you know, I'm a fan of the Sol Naciente anyway. I think it's a great looking finishing move, but it somehow he cranks up the intensity and velocity of it against Kness with this specific modification to it, which unfortunately I also cannot think of the name of.
Yeah, that's something we might need to ask someone on a future show.
I promise he will know it because he referenced it on a podcast I was listening to last night and I just didn't write it down.
Hey, I mean, that happens to the best of us. Do you have any more thoughts about the Kobe World match before I get into the rematch they would have a couple of weeks later?
It is essential viewing if you've never seen it.
Yep, and this match is up on the network on the Kobe World. Like, it's an edited Kobe World from 2003 or Anniversario, but the match is up there in full there. A match that I caught because I was like, oh, I have this match. I should check it out here. Is from August 10th, 2003, so 5 weeks later. And this is a rematch for the NWA World Welterweight title. And it's interesting because the few changes with this match, because now that the two of them now respect each other and they like the fighting that they bring to each other, and it's something where, like, you see, well, like, Doofixer does not get involved in this. Italian Connection is not a part of it in this, and it's something that now he has. The big thing here is that Kness now knows that he has the answer for the Sol Naciente, and then Yoshino goes for the cross arm figure for the Kness variant here. But the thing that happens is that Kness is able to get to the ropes, and then they start going into pin combinations, which really was, he was able to get out of the Sol Nocicel. So he figured it out here, and he goes for the from jungle, and he turns that into a crucifix hold to win. I don't think the next match we're going to talk about is my favorite match of the series, Case, but this was like the progression one of, like, all right, now we're seeing where we could take it through now that this is our third match in a year. And sadly, as you said, Kness gets injured not more than a month and a half after that and is out really up until the match we're going to talk about in 2005.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I don't have anything to add here. But Mike saying that this next match is his favorite is fascinating to me. So please, let's jump ahead to 2005, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely. So this is for the inaugural Open the Brave Gate Championship match, the first round match. This is March 3rd, 13th, 2005. I had the venue. It was pulled up a second ago. I don't think this is Starlings, right?
No, this is in Nagoya.
Okay, so the one before this was in Starlings. 2008-10-2003 was from Starlings. This one's from the Nagoya International Center. And this is for the Open the Brave Gate Championship. And I just love this match because this one really kind of comes as a culmination of, all right, we're facing off against each other, but it might have been almost a year and a half ago the last time we faced each other. But Kness just really... Like putting it together here, you've Kness coming back from that first major injury. And this match for me is in a way that since, like, it took him basically 3 years to get back to having Yoshino's number, because it felt like in this match, at least during a lot of it for me, Case, I felt like that Kness had Yoshino's number through a part of it. And especially to Yoshino, who seems really done with being the sexy Tarzan at this point.
Well, this is the show where he turns and joins Blood Generation, right?
I thought that I need to pull this up now because Blood Generation coming together, because they had Waku Waku Fuji Land for like that first few months.
Well, Blood Generation forms on the first Korakuen of 2005, January 14th. Because Doi, the main event of this show is Yoshino versus Doi, and Doi is full Blood Gen at this point. And there is so this show is a pay-per-view, so we get it all in full. We get all the tournament matches, plus a really, really, really fun Shima Fuji Shingo versus Mori Hulk Magnum Tokyo six-man. So Blood Generation versus what would become Posse Arts. That match kicks ass. This whole show is great. I love this show, and I really love this opening match.
Yes, so Yoshino turns 2 weeks later, so okay. He does not turn until after this, because this is a one-night tournament, and the conceit about the Brave Gate, at least during this time, was whenever it was vacated, they would have an eight-man tournament, and the thing is that the front plate would break off into eight pieces, and the big thing was, like, after everyone would have their pieces, and whenever someone was eliminated, they would take the loser's pieces, they would add it to the belt until, in the final, you would have the winner putting the final two pieces into the belt, and they would have the completed Brave Gate title. And it's something about this, like, thing, like, this was Yoshino really kind of him and Kness, when Kness returned, the two of them was like, we need to have a successor to the NWA World Welterweight title. And they decided that we're going to do this, and we are kind of aligning each other because Italian Connection, for all intents and purposes, was basically done at this point. Like Milano was still around. Mori was already moving towards Paz Hearts, and they already dropped the triangle gate at this point. So it was, this was like the last vestiges of it. And maybe that's why he's so over it. I forgot that it was 2 weeks later that he joined Blood Generation.
Well, this is Italian Connection truly at a dead point, because Milano leaves at the end of February, and this is halfway through March. So Milano's not even there anymore. So it's Yoshino's unit, and yeah, he's over it. And who could blame him? Because this, it's interesting, you know, the T2P match, both characters feel really fresh. The 2003 Anniversario match, they both feel like they're at their apex. And then here, Kness feels very fresh, but Yoshino as a character is just not it. And luckily, the in-ring is so good that they make up for that. But it doesn't have... Now, I love this match. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot that I love to it. But it doesn't have that character-driven oomph that I think the other three matches that I watched have.
Yeah, and I think, like, instead of that, we had Kness, like, really, like, it's interesting, like, he goes back to the knee like he did in December of 2002, and there was, like, this knee buster spot where, like, he drives the Yoshino's knees first into the mat, and Yoshino just, like, screams bloody murder afterwards, and I was like, all right, this is really super sick. And then the way that Kness is like, all right, I am done with like these pin combinations, and then gets caught in a big deep pin combination that the crowd explodes for when Yoshino finally gets the pin out of it, because it's like, all right, we have counters to each other's submissions. Now we're trying to get off holds in this match. I think that's what the progression is, like, all right, we are doing this here, and we are not the same people we were 2 years ago. We're kind of on the same page here. We're allied a little bit at this point. Like, Kness was a part of Final MTK, but it was one of those things that Yoshino and Kness were kind of teaming together at this point. Do you know of the other people in this inaugural tournament, Case?
Okay, let me see if I can name all eight off the top of my head.
Okay, here we go.
So there's Yoshino, there's Kness, there's Doi, there's Super Shisa, there is Psycho, I know, was in this tournament, so that's five. The other three, I believe Raimu Mishima was in this tournament, and that leaves
me
with...
All right, that was the one I thought you were going to get skipped up on. Yeah, you got six out of eight. Okay. It was Daniel at this point, though.
Okay, wow, okay, my bad. The two wrestlers that I have not named, did they wrestle each other in the first round, or no?
So Psycho pinned one person, and Mishima pinned another one.
Two first-round
losers. You've named all the semifinalists. Yes, Psycho gets a pin over someone in this match, in this tournament.
Well, that changes things drastically. So Mishima and Psycho went over in the first round?
That's right. The semifinals were Yoshino versus Psycho and Doi versus Mishima.
So was Dragon Kid not in this?
He was not in the tournament, no.
Okay, all right. That doesn't count as a guess, because I was clarifying that he wasn't in it. So 2005 roster, you have to lose to Psycho and Daniel Mishima.
I will give you... Did you want one hint?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Let me... Look, I'm working through a lot right now. Let me work through this. Is one of them Naoki Tanizaki?
Naoki Tanizaki loses to Psycho in 3 minutes and 17 seconds.
Great. Okay, nailed that. Who is the last person in this tournament? Because it can't be a Final M2K guy. Mori is in a six-man. Who else is on the roster? It's 2005. There's like 12 guys on the roster. Okay. All right. Here is my shot in the dark guess.
Okay.
If I'm wrong, tell me who it is, because I honestly do not know if it's not this person. Is it Black Tights Tozawa?
It is Genki Horiguchi.
Oh, son of a bitch. What has Genki Horiguchi ever done?
my hint was going to be he is a stablemate of someone who was not in the tournament in Dragon Kid at the time, because this is Doofixer as Faces.
So I have watched all of 2005 as of this point 2 years ago, because the first thing I did when COVID hit was goddamn 2 years. We've been doing this show weekly for 2 years, which is a really good feeling, by the way. But holy shit, COVID has lasted for 2 years. The first things I did was I had Chad Campbell build me a list of IWA Mid-South matches to watch. And then I got my hands on all of 2005 Dragon Gate, and I went through it all very quickly and loved it. But I do not remember a 9.5 minute Daniel Mishima versus Genki Horiguchi singles match where Mishima went over. That does not sound familiar.
Well, I guess the better hint would have been, okay, I forgot that Taneon was in Doofixer at this point too. So that would have been the better hint, saying, okay, they both were in Doofixer together. Then that wouldn't have given it away, because you probably would have forgot that Taneon was in Doofixer as well, like I did.
You know, believe it or not, Mike, I did forget Naoki Tanizaki's unit history at the start of 2005. And for that, I am underqualified for this podcast, I guess.
Hey, I mean, I feel like a lot of people probably forgot like that. Yeah, this is when he was Shingo Takagi's rival, which was kind of funny in retrospect. Like,
it's awesome. They had really good chemistry.
They did, because Taneon would brawl, and I mean that plays right into Shingo's hand, like, playbook. But it's like one of those things that's like, we can get over this, like, you're done here. Because the thing is that Taneon did a trial series to get into Doofixer. Tanizaki lost all 10 matches, and he was given a 5-match retrial series, and then he lost all of them, and they still let him in afterwards. And this was right when Magnum was like, this BB Hulk kid, I like the cut of his jib, and he tried to do like both of those, and then Paz Hearts really came out of it there. But yeah, early 2005, I really ought to revisit early 2005 when I have time.
Well, I'm looking at the TV listings right now. So the TV that aired before this was BB Hulk's debut, and then he's in that great 6-man tag on this show. And then the TV after this is when Tozawa debuts against Don Fuji. So we're in what became the era of the Big Six. These guys are just debuting at this point in the company.
Yeah, and I mean, young boy Tozawa, like, that was a trip, because he was invited into Final M2K, but then he rejected it pretty soon after. And it was always like kind of like an interesting thing, because like Hulk came in and he was already dancing, and you had Magnum with him, and then you had Shima, of course, with Shingo. And then it was like, oh yeah, so the person who is the senior to Akira Tozawa, and I say this all the time, it's not like Masaki Mochizuki like one would think. Don Fuji would have a lot of matches against him, but it wasn't really Don Fuji. It was Kenichiro Arai, damn it.
Yeah, you wonder why for so many years Tozawa had a lot of resentment and anger, perhaps towards himself and the promotion, when you look at the way Shingo and Hulk debut, and then Tozawa just gets his ass kicked by Don Fuji for 6 months, basically.
Yeah, and then you had Katsuo coming out. Katsuo just, you know, being Katsuo and getting more over. And then very soon after, then you had Yamato debut, and Yamato kind of was like, oh yeah, no, I'll join Final M2K. That's fine. I'm okay with that. And Arakan, of course, leaves, and then does Tozawa Juku. So I think that was always kind of one of those things that's like, yeah, no, he's getting tied back to that. And then you also have 2006, man. That was a wild year, because Renaissance, Pentagon Black came through, Paz Hearts, the fact that Magnum really wanted to be in 5 stables in the same time. It was just insane.
Well, in 2006, you also have the Open the Foreigner floodgate. You have Dos Caras versus BB Hulk in a horrific Kobe World match. And then you have Shingo versus Fat Guy Pink Singlet Yoshi in an even worse Kobe World match. Like 2005, for all of the chaos with Milano leaving and, you know, really this company getting off the ground to a real extent, because the rest of 2004 is mostly a holding pattern. 2005 is when things kick off, and 2005 is maybe the best year they ever had. 2006 does not have that same charm.
I mean, 2006 was a rough Kobe world. Just, ugh. I mean, because Yoshi did not Yoshi and Shingo, that just was not happening.
Well,
there.
Well, Yoshi's a horrible wrestler. That's why that didn't work. I mean, it's as simple as that. I've never seen the guy have a good match, and that includes him wrestling Shingo, so he's helpless at that point. Of course, Kobe World 2006, headlined by Shima versus Magnitude Kishiwana in a no ropes match. And why was that? It's because it takes too long to put the ropes back up, so they might as well go on last. And that is why Shima stays winning.
Yeah, God. I mean, I just like going back on it, like the fact that he pulled that off, and like at that point, people weren't pissed off at him and still stuck around for a dozen years. And now it's like, oh, yeah, I'm not going over Goto. Fuck that. Goto's not going over me. Because, like, didn't he kind of get like fluke lost out of the King of Pro Wrestling match, too? Like, he really has not suffered a loss in New Japan so far.
No, he's the best. He stays winning.
What a man. What a man. But yeah, it's that this match, and I think it's really because of like the series there, because Yoshino then quickly gets into tag work. He does Brave Gate stuff, and Kness is just, it's very hard for him at that point to like stay on the roster for a real continued period of time. That like, that's another reason why this match especially resonates with me, I would say. And that's another reason why I kind of enjoyed it. And I mean, because like he pretty much soon after was immediately really kind of injured for a bunch, and they kind of took him, they kind of put him in like singles matches, and he started being one of the he kind of took over Yuzushi Kanda's role as GM in a way. And then it really took him until 2007 with Zetterans, and it became kind of a thing that kind of let him keep on going with it. And this for a while, that this was like another like brief high point for him, until really in 2009 and 2010 when he finally had one of his last really long stretches on the roster that would continue pretty much up until the our last match we're talking about on the show, and that's from Kobe World 2013.
So real quick, final thoughts on the 2005 match, which I have at 4 stars. I have all of these matches that we've talked about at 4 stars or higher. There's 2 spots here that I loved so much that I just want to be sure that I mentioned them. They both happened pretty early in the match. One, where Yoshino goes for, from Jungle, and then the counter to that is the Judah. Do I have that correct?
From Jungle, the Judah is not... Judah is the counter to the Christo. I'm trying to remember what the counter right now to the... Well, you could do the Judah out of it because you drop down for it. There's the...
Yoshino's been retired for 8 months. I can't remember his moves now. What's the kind of octopus hold-looking thing he does?
From Jungle.
From Jungle. Andrew Rich is going to kill us. Yeah, so what's the counter to the From Jungle?
That's what I'm blanking on. It's not a Yoshino's move I'm blanking on. It's a Kness move.
It doesn't matter. So Yoshino does the From Jungle. Kness does his counter to that. And then Yoshino counters that counter into a roll-up, which was awesome. Blew my mind. And then a little bit later, Yoshino gets Kness in the Sol Naciente. Kness reaches the ropes. And this is the only time I've ever seen Yoshino do this, where he keeps the wrist held, he keeps contact with Kness and just whips him across the ring and reapplies Sol Naciente. I have watched hundreds and hundreds of Masato Yoshino matches. Some would even say I've watched 25 or so Speed Muscle matches. I have never seen Yoshino do that spot before, and I loved it. So I just wanted to be sure to mention that.
Yeah, it was like a really sick version of it. So I think I have the name, and I'm not positive about this, about the Sol Naciente variant. The Tarzan Heart is the cross-legged STF, which is kind of what he did there.
That sounds right. I will take your word for it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just going to say that's what it is. But yeah, gosh. It's something about this, because like, yeah, the whole entire sequence written down here about this match is that like the viciousness in him whipping him away from the ropes right back into Sol Naciente, going like, not now, fucker. I've had your number for the last 3 years. we might be on a good page right now, but that's not happening here. I was the welterweight champion, and I want to be the Bravegate champion. I thought that was like really, really special. I think I would say that I would go 4 on the T2P match, 4.25 at 4.25 for the fourth anniversario match, 3.75 for the rematch that happened there. Just because the rematch was actually a pretty short match, it was like 10 minutes on the dot. I was 4.5 on this one. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Just seeing the escalation with it and like the viciousness that they worked here, I thought was really kind of cool.
I am at 4.5 on the next match, the final one that we're going to talk about.
Right, so this is 2013. This is for the Open the Bravegate Championship. Masato Yoshino defending against Kness here. And the thing about this match is, like, they had like the great like music video ahead of time, like, being like, oh yeah, we've been doing this for a decade now. Kness seems to be in a good place. I want to have this match here. And at least like from the music video, it was like a really like nice way of building up for it. And also you had like Yoshino completely just tanned out at this point, and Kness like looking in the best shape that he looked like. Like he looked like he was in the same shape, if not better, than he was in 2002.
So there's a number of things to really like about this match. I love this era of Kness where from June to July, he has that M2K reunion era. And I don't, Mike, do you remember this match? It was in Corken Hall, June 5th of 2013. It was Susumu Kness and Mochizuki winning the Triangle Gate belts against Doi, Rich Swann, and Sachihoko Boy.
Yeah. So like they did, this was like the first big reunion they had there. That it was just like really just kind of sick that like, and it was something that like, this was in the era before streaming. So we got the original 2K theme for it. And it was like, oh, they took them all down for this year. And it was just like this, it just was like, oh, it's the original M2K out here for once more. And this is after Kness came back from like history of injuries and really kind of putting it together. He stayed out of Junction 3 and Blood Warriors, forming a unit that I think gets too much crap. Windows MG. I thought Windows was a fun unit for what it was. And yeah.
I have no issue with Windows. I will say I referenced that Triangle Gate match because it is so good. And it is just one of those matches that, because the digital archive that Dragon Gate provides is so poorly, it sucks. That's a match that I want to link to everybody, but I don't even have a copy of it anymore. I haven't seen it in years, but I love that M2K versus World 1 International match. And that leads to Kness getting hot. He wins a number one contender match over Naoki Tanizaki that leads to this match. And, at this point, Kness in a big match can still go. There's the pageantry and the presentation of a Kobe world that they honed at this point. And then there is Masato Yoshino, and holy shit, man, he's good in 2002, he's great in 2003, he's world-class in 2005, and by 2013, he has somehow surpassed that level again. And it's really here. It's something about 2013, to me, where Yoshino takes that level into legendary status, because he wins this match. He ends up winning the Dream Gate, 2 months after this. And from that time onwards, Masato Yoshino is the guy. He is the legend that we came to know and respect, ultimately retired last year. But this is that illustrious Yoshino run that made us care so much when he finally hung up the boots last year. In a way, it really begins with this match.
Yeah, and you talk about his evolution here. He comes out in Italian Connection style speedstar gear. That is just like, you already have him being like, all right, this is not like my 10-year or 13-year anniversary, but this is the big feud that I had as a member of Italian Connection, and you had this. And it really was, in a way, that like, this was the moment, and this was like the big era-changing show. Like Kobe World 2013 is like, because this was fourth from the top case. This Bravegate match was fourth to the top because we had Yamato versus Mochizuki in a no DQ match. We had for the Twin Gates a Die Fly versus BB Hulk and Akira Tozawa. And then the era ending match, Shima dropping the Dreamgate to Shingo Takagi after the 15 title defense run. Like, this was just such an insane, just insane run of shows here.
And here's how good this show is. That Shima versus Shingo match is great. It's objectively great. It is the worst of the last four matches because I think this match is clearly better. Yamato versus Mochizuki is crazy underrated. I don't know if anybody loves that match more than me, but I fucking love that match. And then Doi and Ricochet versus Tozawa and Hulk is one of the all-time great, most loved, highly regarded Twin Gate matches there's ever been.
Yeah, yeah, it's just one of those things that, like, this really was like if the Blood Warriors versus Junction 3 feud really embodied the promotion and set itself up for the next decade. This was the decade defining show that, like, set up the rest of it, because, like, you even have, like, further down the card, like, you had Habu showing up against the Jimmies. So the Jimmies are already a part of this at this point. You have Mad Blanky at the point, like, right before Mad Blanky would start to change. Really, like we're starting to see, like, the dying days of Tozawa, Mad Blanky here, and then, like, you have just, like, the fact that the Shima run was ended that way. And yeah, out of the four matches we mentioned, the main event's the worst match, and all of them are at least 4.25 stars.
And the opener on that show is really good, too. I think Shima versus Shingo was better, but if you told me, hey, you know what? I don't really love their chemistry. I think the sixth man that opened the show, which was Swan, Sachi Hokoboy, and Super Shisa versus Tamanaga, Super Shinlock, and Kotoka, in a way, that match was really fun and kind of had a sort of charm to it. Of course, is it better than Shima versus Shingo? No, but it's really, really fun. Kobe World 2013, now that I sit here and think about it, fucking rocks.
I mean, when your cooldown match is Cyber Kong, Habu, and Osawa versus the Jimmies, and that match still was not bad. Like, you have something on there. You do have to have Old Man Fujiwara on the show, but it was against Stalker, so it's okay.
Cyber Kong, Habu, and Nozawa as a trio. My God.
Just insane stuff. But getting back to the match at hand here, it's something that, like, you have, like, the Ude Yoshino, a move that he stopped doing, and you have vampire scissors, and just, like, the way that the crowd went nuts for the vampire scissors. Like, this really felt like, oh, wow, it feels like that Kness is back. Like, yeah, the Darkness Buster and all this stuff here. And it's just, like, shows, like, a capstone of an 11 year of chemistry. Yes, Kness did not get it over in the end, but it was just, like, Darkness Dragon versus Dragon Kid, that's my favorite match in company history. And a lot of that is in the pageantry, and a lot of that is just how that match is laid out here. But for, like, the first 11 years, this became kind of the feud, and this became real. This, like, was, like, ending that era of the feud before Yoshino would become the guy for the next 9 years.
This is the band playing their greatest hits. And it's everything you want it to be. It's not that they're old and that they can't produce anymore. It's not that, you know, 5-10 years ago, they were younger and alive and those songs sounded better, and that this, you know, takes you back to that time. It's this band is playing their greatest hits and they still kick ass. They're still top-notch professional wrestlers. I love this match. I love this era of Yoshino so much. I love when Kness, at this elder point of his career, could hang with guys in a big match. This is everything that I want it to be. And to your point about them breaking out old moves and the crowd being into it, that was my biggest takeaway from watching these four matches, is just how hot the crowd is for all of these matches. I mean, this goes, you know, it's an 11-year run from 2002 to 2013, using entirely different fan bases from T2P to Kobe World 2013. And every stop along the way, the crowd is molten for Yoshino versus Kness.
Yeah, and it's something that, like, Yoshino goes for the drive-by kick within, like, the first 2 minutes of this match.
he does the drive-by kick into a moonsault to the floor, which I don't think I've ever seen him do other than in this match.
Yeah, like, this is like, all right, we're going on this. Like, it's not just the band playing their greatest hits. It's like, hey, we're going to play some deep cuts, but we're going to do the deep cut, and this will be the best song you ever heard.
It was truly fan service. I mean, it was everything. You know, we talk about this with a lot of the callbacks to certain storylines that Dragon Gate has done in the past and how rewarding it is as a long-term viewer. Even here, just from a purely in-ring standpoint, this was so rewarding to see.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, we make the comments about hot fighting, and this kind of, in a way, like, you don't necessarily see the hot fighting now, but this was kind of like the end of the era. This was like the last hot fighting match, I guess I would say, in a way. And it's not that Kness would, his career would go quickly dovetail here. Like, he still, like we talked about the Jimmys and Mad Blanky and all of that, so he still had some of it there, but this felt like an encapsulation of his career, because it was like no one that like resonates as much as Masato Yoshino with him. So like having this match on the biggest stage, like 10 years to the day since like their last Kobe World match here, is really special.
You know, Mike, I'm no broadcaster, but I am a fan of Norm Macdonald, and we've referenced it so many times in the podcast, but I get the feeling, just given some of the coverage that Dragon has gotten lately, we might have newer listeners to the show. Can you explain to the folks at home what hot fighting is?
So hot fighting was something that Kness would say, like, and became kind of a phrase about this, because like there's the fan service, like having Jimmy's was very much a fan service thing, but then you'd have like the matches that were incredibly invigorating. It would give you a hot feeling. You'd be pumped up, standing and pacing. Like basically this is the Dragon equivalent of standing and pacing. It's the best way to put it, I would say, Case.
Yes, that is honestly a great way to put it. That's really funny.
That just came together to me right then, right there.
Because, yeah, no, that's perfect.
I mean, because you can see, like, Kness, like, after this match, like, in the locker room, ripping a heater and just going, like, ah, that was what I live for. This is my very much a Davey Richards kind of promo after that.
Oh, God, can you imagine?
I imagine
Kness going after his ex-wife in a promo.
I can't imagine anything of the sort there. Kness is a nice man.
That's very true. I've only heard good things.
Well, only good things. Yeah, I'm right now looking at, you know what I need to go find? And this sadly 2013 is just a rough year to find this. The special 300th episode of Dragon Gate on Gayora. Guess what match Kness has in a singles match?
Oh God, I have no idea.
Kness versus Habo.
Oh, so 4 stars. Put it on the board.
Yeah. Not to prolong this episode, we're trying to keep it a little short here. They also have, in the main event, a open lottery 10-man tag team match. Shima, Don Fuji, Mochizuki, Saito, and Uha versus BB Hulk, Susumu, Yoshino, Doi, and Yamato. They go half an hour in that. Shingo versus Tozawa in 7 minutes. I wonder why it was only 7 minutes.
That was the start of Monster Express.
Yeah, they might have launched that here. Yeah, that makes sense, because this was right before Kobe World that year.
This was Kobe... Okay, wait, hold on. So this was right before World 2013?
Yeah. Okay. This was before Kobe World.
Well, then I'm wrong, because Tozawa gets outed from Mad Blanky in August. So they did some sort of angle leading to Tozawa and Shingo becoming partners like a month and a half later.
Yeah, that's right. A match that, you know, maybe I'm a little perverted that I want to see this. Cyber Kong versus Kakatora in a singles match on this Korkin.
No, I'm good on that. I don't need to see that shit. I believe that main event, my memory could be off, because I haven't. That main event, this was the first Dragon Gate show to air on Ustream, and I was not following the company at this point. I did not watch it on Ustream, but that main event is one of the first Dragon Gate matches I saw. I believe Shima does a Meteora off of the, like, Cork and Hall tunnel on that show, or at least he teases it. I don't remember if he actually hit it or not, but there's some nutty, like, Shima feeding off the crowd spots in that big tag.
Yeah, it's just a wild show. Like, the opener is Swan, Ricochet, and Saatchi versus Genki, Kanda, and Tanion. Like, good stuff on this show.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. But, You know, it's something that, like, this feud, like, we're watching this, like, you see Dragon Gate pass through the eras, you know, because you have something in the first match of the feud is in T2P, very cemented. Like, this isn't the aftermath of Toriyama Japan versus T2P, but you have, like, the last vestiges of that. And then in 2003, you already have the combined roster. You have the fact that Yoshino is already kind of protected. You have Dew Fixer in there. And then you have a match from 2005, you know, early days of Dragon Gate proper. And then you jump forward to 2013 when it's its own distinct thing going through its own, like, unit shifts and generation changes. And the fact that this is the show that launches the Big Six era is the last time that Kness and Masato Yoshino have a match. It's kind of perfect in that way.
No, it's really like flipping through a history book in that sense. And I will close on one of the first points that I made, which is that all of these matches that we talked about, there's nothing in wrestling that feels quite like these matches. No one is doing the grappling at the pace they're doing. Obviously, no one is working at the speed they were working at, and no one is telling these intricate 12 to 15 minute stories in a singular match the way that Yoshino and Kness did. I cannot recommend them enough if you have not seen them. The two Kobe World matches, the 2003 and the 2013, those are on the network. The T2P match will be on there shortly. The 2005 match, good luck. I don't know when. You know, if you ask really nicely, maybe I'll send it to you if you really want to see it. But yeah, it's these are matches that if you like Dragon Gate, if you like Toriyama, and you've never seen these, this is 101 stuff. This is stuff that you will love if you've never seen it. And if it's been years since you've watched it, take some time and revisit it, because these matches are so much fun.
Yeah, no, at the very least, the two Kobe World matches are required viewing, I would say. And, you know, they're up on the network, so go out there and check those out. And then, you know, I think it's probably going to be, I would guess, November when they'll pop up that T2P match. So, you know, just like if we're listening to the show in 2 months, and check it out then, I guess. But Case, we went an hour 15. Your voice, I know you were kind of worried about it, if you'd be able to perform. You did great in your flu game.
I'm so sorry to anybody that made it through this. I should have just let Mike do the show solo. I'm so sorry. I had nothing to prove. We didn't have a sponsor. There's no reason for me to be here. So if you made it this far, truly thank you. I promise I'll be backing up at 100% next week.
Yeah, and you know, there is a show this weekend in Kobe that they have coming up, but that's it for the month of March. So we'll be doing a lot more Kness stuff in upcoming weeks. You could follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. You could follow me at Fujihaya, Cases at _ in your case. That's going to do it for Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week talking more about Dragon Gate. Take care.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.